Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I am your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
I had to help my wife clean out the snake cages, so I'm a little tired.
That sounds like a daunting task.
She has something like 30 snakes?
Yeah, that'll do it. today we might... Maybe there are questions that might get into some snakes. Who knows?
You selected them.
I do know. That's true.
But there aren't any.
There are not any. You got to ruin the mystique. Come on.
Yes, that's what we do here. We ruin the mystique. Here's the mystique. People are writing a letter. Here's my lore question. I won't tell you for the mystique. No, that's what I do. I ruin the mystique.
All right. Well, anyway, we're going to be answering your questions this week. And thank you very much for sending those in. You can go ahead and send any questions you have to podcast@blizzardwatch.com or send them to us on our Discord channels. We do have several set aside, one specifically for patron supporters. We like to give them a little bit of a benefit for supporting us in our endeavors and make sure we have a separate channel for them, which we do look to first. But we do have one for non-patrons. We understand that not everybody can afford to support us in that way. So we do look there as well. And if you can't afford to check us out on Patreon, also consider checking us out on Spotify. The more plays that you give us on our podcast there, the better we are. So you can do that now. We're not going to do the faux excitement thing, but yes, you can listen to us there, which we would greatly appreciate. What? There we go. All right. Our first question, this is going to be coming from Gino from Daggerspire. Question for Lorewatch. The general assumption is that the lantern was what Sylvanas got out of the deal with Helya, but something that was brought up on the show got me thinking. Boamsamdi was compared to Odin and how they interfered with souls going to the Shadowlands. What if the lantern was not the thing that Sylvanas gained, but rather her contractual obligation to take Eir out of the question? Or perhaps it was that she got out of the deal, but she was taking Eir out of the picture like she was trying to do with Boamsamdi. Whatever reason that may be, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the possibility. And thank you for the great podcast I look forward to every week. That is actually an interesting possibility, that maybe that was her end of the bargain, was not enslaving the Valkyr, but taking Eir out of the picture so that lighter Valkyr couldn't be created more for Odin. What do you think? You spent more time with Grandpa Firebeard than I have.
I think it's certainly a possibility. I mean, it seems clear that she was attempting to enslave Eir. That's what she was trying to do with the lantern. It seems pretty. She even says as much when she's doing it. But you know, what's the old saying from Futurama? It can do two things. I mean, you know, if you enslave Eir, you've taken her away from Odin. He doesn't have any Valkyr anymore. Although he made Aiyr, so he could make another one.
He could, you know, yeah. He could elevate somebody else to that position. Yeah, yeah.
He made Helya a Valkyr. I mean, he still has the capacity to do it. They gave it to him. It would be an inconvenience for him. It would take him time to replace her. But it, I mean, clearly, you know, when you go into the raid, I want to call it Halls of Valor. I think it's called that. When you go into the raid, he's got Hersha right there waiting in the wings to be the next Aiyr. It would have taken him maybe 5 minutes. So I don't think it's as simple as, I don't think that she was told, you know, hey, go take Aiyr out for us. I don't think that Aiyr is important enough.
But do you think it might have been something with, like, maybe binding that power? Because there seems to be, like, a theme with that, too. Maybe not necessarily in her service or using it, which, I mean, it could be. Obviously, she said something along the lines
of, if you're doing that, you have to go after Odin. If you want to take the power, you have to take it out of Odin, because Odin still has it. Odin can make another one anytime he wants. So that's the reason that I don't think this is the case. It's just because Aiyr is important in that she's the head of the Valkyr. But she's the head of Odin's Valkyr. Odin can make a new Aiyr if he needs to. He still has... In fact, Aiyr is literally the replacement for Helya. When Helya broke away and started her own group and banished them, she trapped the Halls of Valor in another, you know, in a pocket dimension for you know, thousands of years now. He just made a new one. So that's why I don't think Aiyr is that important. I don't think taking Aiyr out of the picture does anything. It's not. I certainly think it might be the kind of thing Helya would do out of pure spite.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
You know, because she is a spiteful person, and that I'm not saying she's wrong to be. If I were Helya, I'd significantly have some spite to vent. And I think if Sylvanas had her own Valkyr, it would go a ways towards getting her in the direction they wanted for her anyway. She the whole time she's wanted to do that. That was her. It was kind of the price of admission for a while up until the, you know, it's actually interesting. If you do talk to, if you were Horde loyal to Sylvanas at the end of this expansion, when she finally goes too far and loses the Horde, she says to you, you know, I did care. I cared about my people. I wanted to help them. And I guess that's not going to happen. Like you, there's a kind of resignation to it. You know, she was trying in her own way to do what she thought was best. I don't know exactly what she thought she was doing, but there's a sensation that she felt like, well, you know, this whole thing is a ridiculous travesty anyway. Being undead is actually better. Because it removes you from this ridiculous cycle of things where you're effectively trapped in an otherworldly existence where you're an anima battery or what have you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Didn't even think
and
of that.
And by being undead, you don't have to go there anymore. You don't have to leave this world. You're free. So I don't know. I don't know what she was thinking about. I don't think Aiyr is important enough to have been the show, for lack of a better word. But I do think it's interesting to point this out because we have always been thinking the lantern was particularly important. It might not have been.
Yeah, it could have just been a thing, right? Like it just happened to be the tool at the moment.
Yeah, it's quite possible. I mean, that's something to think about. I just don't think Aiyr is that important. It's Odin you need to stop. And getting rid of Aiyr or corrupting Aiyr wouldn't stop Odin even a moment. Like I said, he's got Hersha waiting. He makes Valkyr all the time. He could make a new one. So, yeah, that's why I'm not 100% on this.
Yeah, or do we think that it might have been a way to... See, and I guess this is the weird question, because it is the one piece that seems a little bit out of place, at least to me. Just because, like, yeah, it could be the whole enslaving thing, but what if the end goal was Odin? To sort of circumvent it, because there is, as Geno points out here, or Geno, you know, we have this whole thing where in the latest book in Shadows Rising, her mission for Nathanos is to take Wamsamdi out, And it's because he's, you know, siphoning souls off. He's opposition. He is competition for the deal that she's struck. But so is Odin in that exact same way. So is there a reason why maybe she didn't go directly after Odin? Or is there a reason that, and I guess from a certain perspective, perspective, I guess we did, right?
I'm not sure if I follow. We didn't. We've never gone after Odin.
No, but we went into the Halls of Valor, or the Trials of Valor, whatever the dungeon was. We beat up his new perspective resurrector. We killed the two that were being used to make her.
We don't kill them.
Well, we took them out of their physical form, and then they go into.
You're talking the five man.
Yeah,
That one wasn't a new perspective. It was just another Valkyr. It was the latest Valkyr. That's all it was.
No. Okay.
No, we aren't even an inconvenience to Odin at any point in that expansion. In fact, we are his Pokemon. Like I've said 100 times, I'm not even kidding about this. We're continuously being tested to see if we're worthy. There's no point where we do anything to Odin that Odin didn't want to have happen. Like it just does not happen at any point in that expansion. And at the end of it all, when we go down into Helya's realm and supposedly kill her and free Odin from her curse, he even says, you know, maybe I'll go visit Ulduar. And that's the last we hear of or see Odin. And then, like, at the end of Battle for Azeroth, when we're contacting the various Titan facilities, we contact Ulduar, and Mimiron shuts off the connection immediately.
Yep.
And we don't know why he did that. Because we've talked to Mimiron several times.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, in Legion, he's the one that helped us with Hadi.
Yeah, but I mean, even after that, we've spoken to him. He's not just that one. There's quite a few interactions with Mimiron. It's like, why is he suddenly just shutting off the connection without even, not even so much as a, why are you contacting us?
Mm-hmm.
Like that was very clearly coming from some Titan facility, and he just goes, boop, shuts it off. That interested me when it happened, and we don't hear any more about it. We don't, you know, because he's, you know, Magni is just always so useful and on the ball. Magni's like, I guess he's annoyed with us for disturbing his work. It's like, dude, it's kind of important. Call him back. Tell him we got Rod in here. We need to talk to him. So I don't know. I don't know what Odin is doing right now, but I definitely think the reason that Sylvanas didn't go after Odin is because she couldn't get to him. Like, straight up, she couldn't. Who could she send? She couldn't even get into the Halls of Valor. For a while, nobody could get into the Halls of Valor. Every time we go to the Halls of Valor, it's because he lets us go there. So,
with him free, though, does that give the opportunity, do we think, that maybe a play could be made there as well? Or do we think he's just kind of stopped making Valkyr for right now?
I am less worried about us making a play against him than him coming after us. Straight up. I think if Sylvanas tried to mess with him, it would go bad for her. For all that she was powerful enough to fight the Lich King, I don't think she wants to take on Odin yet. I don't think that is a nut you want to try and crack. There was a period of time where Odin was host to the raw power of a Titan. Like, remember the Titan's essences were inside, and we never figured out how they ended up in Antorus. We don't know how they went from inside various Titan Forged to inside Antorus. Like, is that what Sargeras was doing? Like, when he was in Northrend, was he collecting, like, Titans? Like, what's going on there? The Avatar of Sargeras, when it was in Northrend, it could have been doing two things again. You know, it could be two things. It keeps popping up.
Or is that why some of the Legion was, you know, rooting around where they were rooting around? Because there's definitely some very, very interesting points where the Legion was going that didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense at you know, certain points in time. So,
I mean, and we know Rodan at one point also had some of Amenthal's essence in him. I don't know. I don't know if you could go after Odin right now. I don't know if you'd have to. There's a lot to that ability. I honestly feel like Odin in some ways might actually be neutralized by himself already, because Odin is the one who had to make a deal. Bonsamdi, his powers seem to come from his nature, his essence. He is what he is. Odin had to make a deal.
Yeah.
And he traded his eye away. And we don't know what happened to it. We don't know if the, you know, the jailer or Muzala or somebody has Odin's eye and can use it to look through and see what he's up to at any given moment. You might not want to kill him. He might be a really good reconnaissance tool. That's the thing that's been bothering me ever since I first read that thing all those years ago. It's like, what do you get out of having, you know, what? Why are you making this deal? Well, how does it benefit you? Other than what? To create instability? Like, is there more to it? Is that eye important in some way? We know that supposedly the jailer has designs on Azeroth's world soul. If you want the world soul, a good thing to have is intelligence on it. Azeroth's prime designate is a pretty big deal if you want to be getting intelligence on what the Titans were doing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what Odin is. Odin is the prime designate. Now that he's free from the Halls of Valor, now that he can actually go to Azeroth, he may have been spending this time reclaiming his position, going to all those Titan facilities that he could get to up in Ulduar, and reassigning himself as prime designate again. You know, because Alokin had tricked the computers into thinking he was prime designate. So there's a lot we don't know yet.
There's a lot of interesting things that we might be coming out of the Shadowlands and having to deal with.
But I will say this. This is an interesting idea. This idea about, like, you know, what the specific phrasing, what if the lantern was not the thing that Sylvanas gained, but rather her contractual obligation to take Aeir out of the equation? I don't think Aeir is the issue, but think about what it might mean if the lantern wasn't what she was trading for. That then begs the question, what was she trading for? I mean, I know that's not actually how begs the question works. Thanks, guys.
I was going to say, like, a lot of people have been positing that it was the power that she started displaying shortly thereafter, because we started seeing her sort of power creep a little bit more.
Power creep is pretty sustainable by the concept that she's the person who's acting as the intermediary for the jailer.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't have to. What if it's the bargain struck is that deal? So up till that point, she hadn't actually made a deal with the jailer yet.
But that became the point where she did, right?
Like if you connect up the fact that it's the Valkyr who bring her back on top, you know, at Ice Crown Citadel. It's the Valkyr who bring her back from death when she throws herself off. And then at the beginning of Cataclysm, she gets killed and the Valkyr sacrifice themselves and bring her back again. And it's only after that that she goes to Stormheim. Yeah, it's only then she goes to Stormheim, connects up with Helya, and does something. And it's after that, and if you think about it, it's after she loses Aiyr. It's when the hourglass is shattered that she seems resigned to her fate. Like, you know, all right, you wouldn't let me do this the simple way. We're going to do this the hard way then. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's quite possible that she came into this bit by bit. She didn't, like, immediately meet the jailer and, like, make a deal with him all the way back. But that she's been, you know, trying to come up with a way around it this whole time and just has not done so.
And it makes the most amount of sense that it would have to be a bit by bit, because dealing with who Sylvanas is as a character, right? Like, how cautious she is, how intelligent she is when dealing with things that are threats. And let's be honest, any deal presented to her is going to be viewed as a threat by her. That's just how that's going to go. So I think it is, like, it's a death by a million paper cuts. It's the slow transition to the point where she can't, I don't want to say weasel out of it, but she can't really, she doesn't have a way around the direct interaction anymore. And I think you're right. I think I can't even talk today. Sorry, guys. We witness sort of that turning point, right? We witness sort of that moment where she goes, okay, I'm going to have to do that this way now, the way that I didn't want to do originally. And I mean, it is an interesting thing to think about. And I mean, I want to thank Gino for that question, because that's given me more to think about as far as the interaction for Sylvanas. Cause we talk a lot about the deal she made, and we do we comment that we don't know exactly what it was a lot, but this is starting to add some more angles to it that maybe I don't think we viewed, or at least in my particular case, didn't consider quite as quickly as some of the others. So thank you very much for that question. Our next one comes from Arulian. Question for either podcast. Well, I stole it for mine. Ha 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 ha. Hello, Watchers. With all of the discussion about the different Shadowlands and Sylvanas being a major player going forward in the expansion, there's something I've been wondering about. Which Shadowland would Sylvanas have gone to if she hadn't been raised by Frostmourne?
Bastion.
You honestly, you think she'd be in Bastion?
She lived and died in service to her people.
You don't think she displayed enough pride or anything else to warrant another place? You don't think that she would have been... Because I could have seen her in Maldraxxus, personally.
No, Maldraxxus is a crap place. Maldraxxus is where you go where you don't do anything for the right reasons. I'll just say that right now. It's where you end up when you didn't quite pull it out. And that's why it's a good place for Draka to have gone. Because for all her strength of will... Draka didn't actually step up and fight.
What about Morgraine?
Morgraine, again, he stepped up and fought, but he fought in the service of an evil monster. Like, look at the Scarlet Crusade. He was a part of the Scarlet Crusade. And they started off trying to do the right thing, but they went bad real fast. And they went bad because they let a demon control them. Morgraine had a lot going for him as a physical power, but he didn't really serve his people.
See,
and that's the thing. It's the service to something greater than yourself that makes Bastion the place you end up. And it's the reason that it's the difference between Maldraxxus and Bastion. Maldraxxus is about will, but they're looking for people with the will to fight who they can make into weapons. They're not looking for people who sacrificed everything for something else. Because in a way, somebody who sacrifices everything for something else is not... What's the old saying from Patton? I don't want you to die for your country. I want you to kill that guy over there who's going to die for his country. That's Maldraxxus. They don't want people who will lay down their lives for others. They want people who will make other people lay down their lives. And Bastion is, no, we do want the people who will lay down their lives. We want the people who serve. We want, you know... That's their focus. That's their goal. Yes. That's the difference between the two. I'm not saying that Sylvanas didn't have pride or ambition, but when you look at her life, her sisters were like, you know, Illyria was like, no, I want vengeance. And Varisa was like, I just want to be myself. And Sylvanas is the one who said, okay, mother, I will pick up the burden you're putting down. I will lead the Farstriders. I will be the Ranger General. She wasn't the one who was supposed to do it. She was the one who did it. She was the one who put down her life and picked up the one that was needed to be led. She's the one who laid down her life in service to her people. Now, you could make a case for Maldraxxus, absolutely. You could make a case for Revendreth, although really that's after she died. The Sylvanas who died fighting Arthas showed only enough pride to say, no, I'm worth more than this. You can't just come in here and tell me what to do. I gave away everything for our people. I get to have this one little thing. I get to have this dalliance with this human is my one thing that I get to have for me. It's not enough, in my opinion, to send you to Revendreth. Now, after she dies, it's a whole different story, but the Sylvanas who died fighting Arthas, Bastion.
Yeah, and I could see the case for Bastion, but I can also see the case for Maldraxxus because I could see her, if given that choice, not letting go of the ability to fight. Because one of the things I think is interesting about Bastion is the Kyrian don't necessarily like go to war, which I thought was rather interesting. Like it, and again, I didn't spend a whole lot of time in Bastion post the initial when you're there, as you're moving through all the realms through your introductions to it, but they've built machines, they have stewards, and then they have people, and then they have the Ascended. And the Ascended basically don't look like they're warriors to me. Yes, they do fight at some point when the Mossworn come, but like that's not their purpose, at least not the way that it's presented.
That's like saying that Uther wasn't a warrior.
I'm not saying that Uther wasn't a warrior, but
he wasn't. He was a paladin. I'm actually not joking.
But
that's the thing. There's a different mindset between I protect and serve and defend and I fight. And, you know, we know that Maldraxxus exists because the Shadowlands need an army. But they don't necessarily exist to serve the Shadowlands. I keep coming back to this. You can't take Sylvanas' service away from her.
I'm not. See, that's the thing. I'm keying off of it. And I'm going through
this. Keying off of it, then she has to go to Bastion. There's no other choice. You can't be a servant Maldraxxus.
Finishing my thoughts, the Shadowlands has proven that, yes, you can go other places besides Bastion if you have service, if you even in service to others. That is not the only defining feature of her as a character before she died. And if she goes to the Arbiter and the system is working the way that it should, and the Arbiter peers into her soul and sees somebody who wants to continue to fight, I could see that being the factor, because that's the X factor that we don't know how it works. Because right now the Arbiter is powered down and not doing anything, not doing their job. We don't know the system with which the Arbiter uses to key off of where somebody has to go. We have vague ideas from all of these different zones, these different lands of the Shadowlands, but we know from their perspective. And even when you're interacting with them, when you show up in those places, it's the, oh, somebody showed up from Orbis. The Arbiter sent somebody to us. We haven't had this in forever. They're even saying they don't choose who goes there. The Arbiter does. And it's the question I think comes back to, what would the Arbiter see? Is it only this service to people, or is it this more complicated person that, yes, her service is to her people, but her entire thing is to protect people, her lands. And I could see that very easily being transitioned to, would you like to lead an army again? And again, I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm saying I think the case can be made for more than just Bastion with her if that is in place. Now, if it's just, oh, you served people and you were selfless in that, and it doesn't matter what else you did, you go to Bastion, yeah, sure.
No, here's the thing. It's not that it's – that was, you know, there's my problem with what you're saying right there. If you look at each of her sisters and herself, that's the difference. All of them were fighters. All of them are fighters. But if you look at the three of them, if you look at the lives they led, it's not that that's the only thing about your personality. It's that that was your priority. Sylvanas made the choice that the other two didn't. When given that option, she chose to do that. That's why I'm saying the Bastion. Now, like, you know, sure, you know, we'll never know, because she was raised by Frostmourne.
Yeah.
She was killed by Frostmourne.
Yep.
So if she'd gone to Bastion, she might have had a great big honking scar on her soul like Uther did. And we might still, in fact, be seeing Sylvanas pop up in multiple places. Here's the thing. I just did I've been playing my paladin. I have my current paladin. I have my level 50 paladin, but I also have my I think he hit level 42 or 43 today, and I was leveling him in Legion. And you go to get, I can't remember the name of the sword you just mentioned, Ashbringer. You go to get Ashbringer, and they say, first we're going to go to Uther's tomb and we're going to commune with him. And you commune with him, and there's Uther, and he has a conversation with you. And he's talking to Maxwell Tyrosius, you know, and he's like, you know, yes, I remember. It's like sitting there going, okay, are you related to the Uther who's in the sword in ICC that we saw when we did all that stuff? Was that the same? Are you that Uther, or are you the one that's in Shadowlands right now learning to give up his past? Who are you?
Mm-hmm.
How are we talking to you? Is that because of the sword? Did the sword pull you into like little pieces, or what's the deal, Uther, ghost, are you just some phantasm of Uther we're seeing? Did the light make a version of Uther for us to talk to? What's happening right now?
And I often wondered about that too, if the light was making like I hate to say a light puppet, but like using its interactions with Uther to make a simulacrum for us to interact with. Because it just seems weird.
I don't know. All I know is if that could have happened to him, maybe it would have happened to her too. Maybe there'd be like 50 Sylvanases running around. I don't know. But it's not that you couldn't make a case for her to end up pretty much anywhere except maybe Ardenweald.
Yeah, I don't think she'd wind up in Ardenweald.
Not seeing a lot of Ardenweald there, but...
She
was head of the Forest Riders, so she kind of understands the natural world a little.
Yeah, but I wouldn't exactly put her. I think the only two that hold any water really are Maldraxxus or Bastion. Like, I don't think she was prideful enough to wind up in Revendreth.
Before her first death, before she gets killed by Arthas, Revendreth is right out.
I'd agree.
Does she have a little pride? Yes, she's proud enough to tell Sun Prince there. Having a hard time with names today. Come on, you know him.
Kael'thas?
Yeah, she's proud enough to tell Kael'thas to pound sand when he gets in the way of her and Thanos.
Oh, absolutely.
But that's it. And that's because she knew her worth. It wasn't like she didn't go around constantly going, I'm the Ranger General. I'm in charge. I'm super great. She would just, no, I decide who gets to be in the Forest Riders, not you. That's not your role, little prince. You go do your job and let me do mine. And before she died, I would give it to Bastion. That's where I would say, looking at her, looking at the life she led versus Illyria. Illyria gave up everything for vengeance and war. Illyria said, no, I won't be the Ranger General. I won't serve my people in the aftermath of this. I want vengeance, and I'm going to get it.
See, in her, I could see her winding up in Revendreth for that.
Revendreth or Maldraxxus, because she's the one that went to go fight the war. The war that, you know, the rest of the High Elves didn't want to fight. She went and she fought it anyway. And she went to another planet to fight it. And then she took that war to like, she just kept going. So yeah, her and Maldraxxus absolutely makes sense. Varisa, it's kind of hard to tell with Varisa because she's got a lot going on.
I would say that Varisa, because everything she does is motivated by selfless intent. I think she's the one that would go to Bastion and Bastion alone.
Oh, hell no. No, selfless intent? No, dude. She tried to assassinate somebody because they killed her husband. There's absolutely selfless intent.
Well, yeah.
Very much selfish intent with Varisa. It's not that she's a bad person. She's not evil, but she tried to assassinate her husband's murderer. She's pretty much focused on staying with her two kids. No, Varisa is a selfish person, and that's fine. A lot of us are selfish. If somebody hurt my wife, oh, hell yeah, vengeance, reprisal. But nevertheless, that's not Bastion. She is not in service to a greater ideal.
Fair enough.
Not that she was ever asked. It's fair to point out that when the Ranger General question came up, they went to Illyria. Illyria said no. So the next person was Sylvanas. Sylvanas was the next in line. It's not like Sylvanas then said no and then Varisa had to do it. Varisa was considered young at the time.
She was the baby.
Of the Windrunners, she was considered the youngest, and they weren't likely to ask her. She was considered respected. They knew she was a good Forest Rider, but they weren't likely to ask her to lead the whole thing. I would say for my take for Sylvanas is Bastion, but I accept that there is a possibility for Maldraxxus, again, because we can't see one way or the other. I really do feel like it needs to be said, this is when she died.
Yes, we're talking about when she died, not when she was raised. And that is the framing of the question. So it is, I want to thank our listener for that question because Aurelian, that is an interesting perspective and question to ask now, especially as we're starting to learn more about the Shadowlands. So thank you very much for that.
Joe and I haven't really fought in a bit.
So. Yeah, it's been a while since we've disagreed on something. So there you go. You guys are welcome. Our next question. Greetings, watchers of compressed water vapor precipitated by colliding temperatures. What are your thoughts on what Azeroth's Titan Soul would look like? I have seen beautiful fan art that looks like a troll or a night elf, but I do not think that they are accurate based on pre-existing humans are orderly like Trope. Titans we have seen, but Azeroth's blood does make things turn all night elfy, so I would like to hear your opinions. Love you guys in the show. Iroh, night elf warrior on Muradin. I've often maintained that like a Titan's soul is not necessarily the Titan physical representation of what they look like when they're fully formed, because essentially when they're fully formed, from what we've seen, they all look relatively similar. They're bipedal humanoid, vaguely, you know, human-ish figures with some aspect of themselves, like their domain, woven into the fabric of their being, right? Like, you look at A&R.
Just say one thing before you continue.
Go ahead.
Are we sure we've ever actually seen a Titan? We've seen representations of them. I mean, the ones we saw at the Pantheon, the Hall of Pantheon, weren't, like, representations that, you know, there's an old saying from a comic book. This it's a JLA versus Avengers. At one point, multiple Earths are being jammed together by cosmic forces, and Iron Man looks down at it and goes, "I can't be seeing this." And Superman responds, "You're not. This is not what's actually happening. It's just your mind trying to give it to you in a way you can understand it. It's real, but you're not actually seeing it. Because if you were, the giant hands would be crushing the planet. I relax, because I'm used to this." And I always want Iron Man to turn Superman and go, "F you, man! Big hands! Smashing planets together!" But that's the thing I always think of when we see Titans. I mean, there's a giant cloud over Azeroth, and then all of a sudden, there's Sargeras getting yanked out of it.
Yeah.
Is that actually happening? I mean, he left a big sword in the planet. It's kind of hard to doubt it, but at the same time, is that's not what he looked like before. Why does he look like that now? Why isn't it what he's looked like in every other representation of him we've seen? And we saw the Avatar of Sargeras. It didn't look like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I often find myself wondering if any image of the Titans we've ever seen, including like when we saw them after we, you know, saved them and they, you know, Agrimmar's giant form and all that, is that them? I don't know the answer to that question.
So the point that I was going to get to was that I think that they can take whatever form they deem necessary, or at least present themselves to our sort of, reconcilable visual input however they want to, or however they seem deem fit at that particular moment. There's a thing that we talk about with when you talk about like gibbering horrors of like the Outer Nights and things like that, where our brains can't actually fathom exactly what they really look like, but it does the best to approximate it in terms that we can understand. And there's entirely the possibility that that's the case. I think, though, the root of the question is, what would Azeroth's Titan soul look like? I think the soul is different than what you're talking about as far as the physical representation. And
yeah, one thing to also point out, we have seen a nascent world soul.
We have, and
that's when we did in 1,000 Years of War. They describe the green sun within the world of Argus. It's the corrupted Titan soul. The Titan soul just looks like an amorphous ball of pure power.
And I think we've seen Azeroths before. And I posited this a long, long time ago, when we first started hearing the corrupted whispers of Ilganoth and all these other entities that started talking about drowning in a circle of stars. And when we went to the different various planes of elemental existence in Cataclysm, and in particular, you go to Deepholm and you look up, you see a circle of stars. When you were a shaman going to the heart of the world, you saw a circle of stars. When we were in Antorus going into the room where the Titans were being tortured by the Shivari, what do you see? You see amalgamations, like this amorphous power, but at the center of it are circles of stars. I think that has something to do with it. I think that's why, you know, that was such an important thing. And I think it goes back to, I think, what Matt was saying earlier, where that might be the core of them. That might be what they sort of best representation of the soul is for those Titans. But then when you start, and it goes along with Antorus, where we start seeing, you know, the nascent soul, where it's, hey, you know, this intense green sun. Well, yeah, if it's at full power, maybe that's what it looks like. But every Titan soul we might have seen at this point is weakened or under siege or attempting to be stripped of its, you know, intelligence or reasoning in order to make it something more akin to what Sargeras wants it to be, to recraft his family. And I've been thinking about that a lot, and I think that's what it is, because last night I rewatched the movie Onward, and there was this interesting part of it where towards the end, a curse is born, and at the center of the curse is like this amorphous energy that then pulls all these things around it to form a shell to give it form. And I thought that was a very good analogy for how I think Titans actually work. I don't think, and going back to something that, like Matt said earlier, we don't know what happened to their souls. We don't know what happened after they slammed into their watchers or how they did that or what happened there. It's probably because, again, they don't necessarily have a form. When you slay one, you're not slaying necessarily their soul. You're slaying the shell that it's sort of encased around it, and that let Sargeras maybe take their souls, or their souls escape into their watchers and then get pushed into somewhere else, because Titans are basically just energy. I think that's the case. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you, but do you have anything else to add on that one?
Well, I mean, first off, the question is obviously asking, what would Azeroth look like if she
formed a shell, right? Yeah.
Okay. And we know that when they came to Azeroth, they created the Titanic Watchers and the Titanforged, because it was effectively the equivalent of like performing surgery with microscopic tools. And we know that Amon-Thul in his physical form was so massive that he could barely interact with stuff happening on the scale. You know, he reached down with like two fingers and plucked Yashaj out. Like you would probably try to rip out something inside, like, oh, look, you got a splinter there. Oh, geez. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. That's how that went.
Mm-hmm.
So their actual bodies seem to be planetary scale.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you think about what that means for what Azeroth would look like, we don't know that they actually take physical form. And in the way that, like, we always see them represented as golden or bronze or whatever, godlike figures. But it's quite possible that left to their own devices, the Titans are just planets. Like,
they're just ego.
Maybe not even that. Ego grows a giant face for no discernible reason other than to be weird. But in all sincerity, they might just be a planet that's got it's alive. You know, it formed that shell around itself. It comes to consciousness. It's a being. Why does it need to change its body? What does it need hands for? What does it need feet for? You know, like maybe it can grow them if it needs them for something, but what does it need them for? 9 times out of 10, you know, I would have used Mogo, by the way, because I'm cooler than you. That's my Green Lantern planet reference, because you went with Ego. Ew. I don't know. I'm being a dick here. But in all sincerity, you know, Azeroth's form might be Azeroth.
Yeah, because one of the questions we've asked a long time ago is what happens, and you guys at home have asked this multiple times, what happens to the entities that live on the Titan when the Titan wakes up? The answer might be nothing. The answer might be that the planet still exists. For the scale of power that we're dealing with the Titans, it's entirely possible that their planets are still where they originally were. Like, at one point in time, we talked about if they were eggs that would hatch. Like, you know, the Doctor Who episode with the moon. But what if they don't? What if they just project themselves? What if they can just project their energy across the cosmos and do what they need to do and have that sort of effect, but don't actually have to go anywhere. Don't actually have to reform.
Or for that matter, what if they go places?
Yeah.
Like what if at some point,
entirely possible,
you know, at some point, Amathul may have been floating in the sky above Azeroth.
And that could be part of, like, we go back with the white lady and the blue child. The blue child disappeared for a while with the story behind it. You know, obviously it was an in-game bug that then, you know, story sort of informed that it was sent away to go learn. Well, what if the planets could actually do that? What if Titans or sentient planets could actually do that? Yeah. What if there were just a whole bunch of planets ringing around Azeroth going, hey, wake up, little sister. You know, like, it's entirely possible. It's also entirely probable that something like that would happen.
I mean, ultimately, we've got images of Sargeras chopping a planet open with his giant sword. And we saw Sargeras use a sword. So it's quite possible that maybe they do have, like, a physical body that looks like a gigantic humanoid. But that might just be, since that form was pulled inside the seat of the Pantheon by the others and shrunk down so that Illidan could beat on it for a while, it's quite possible that's just a projection of Sargeras.
Yeah.
It's just his, you know, his mind. And there might be a planet out there somewhere that is Sargeras. Or, you know, we don't know. There's,
which is
he may have formed the prison plane out of his own body.
I find that fascinating, too, because it could be an explanation of how the Avatar worked to begin with. He just happened to be the first one to figure out how to make himself small enough.
Right? Or to put himself inside a body.
Or compartmentalize himself enough, right?
Like, there's lots of different possibilities here. In terms of, though, what you really want to hear from us is you want to hear what cool thing we think the world would look like. And maybe you want to hear Joe and I argue about whether it would be a troll or a night elf. I don't know, because I don't know at this point if trolls are native to Azeroth or not.
Yeah, because we still haven't answered that. We don't have an answer for that question, although they
did. There's enough of those constructs in Nazmir, which we have to remember, Nazmir is the original place that the Xandalari lived before they moved to Zoldazar.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough of those constructs that look vaguely trollish, although they don't have the tusks. And I'm always reminded of the fact that people talk about the fact that the Night Elves are supposedly descended from trolls. Don't talk to Night Elves about that. They don't like it. But if that's true, if the Night Elves are descended from trolls, it's the biggest, most feral-looking trolls imaginable. The Night Trolls didn't look like other trolls. They were different. They were unique. They were creepy. And it's interesting to me that those are the guys who got turned into, like, Night Elves by the Well of Eternity.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to think about in terms of this. I do get your point, though, about how the blood of Azeroth does seem to make things look like Night Elves. But I will posit with a counter. C'Thun had two Akir servants, the twin emperors. The twin emperors were using Night Elf skeletons.
Yep.
I mean, they did that. Obviously, when they did that, they were just doing it to give them a good body to run around in. But nevertheless, it's worth considering, why did they look like Night Elves? Remember, the Akir had been fighting the Night Elves. Like, specifically, the Karaji were fighting the Night Elves. Why? And before that, they were fighting the Trolls. The Akir Troll War pushed both groups back to almost the Stone Age.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it devastated the Akir and created the Karaji and the Nerubians and the Mantid. And it broke up the Xandalari's troll empire and created pocket empires all over the place, which left them weak, that when the Night Elves rose up, the Night Elves were able to push them aside pretty easily. Why? Like, why would they then make a Night Elf-looking thing? And if you look at the Xandalar and the Night Elves have a lot in common. Like, they stand pretty much the same way. They're very similar. So I think it probably would be something trollish or elfish or some combination of the two.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have much to offer because I think that those are the two most likely forms that we would see.
I mean, I'd rather it was a Torin, but, you know, no one listens to me.
I mean, I'd rather it was something like a Mogu, because I think that would be far more interesting.
Mogu are crafted. They're Titan forged.
They are.
So it feels weird that Azeroth didn't make them. They were made by the other Titans to help save Azeroth. I do think that it's weird that Mogu and humans and dwarves and gnomes – and Tolvir are all essentially descended from the same things. That's always fascinated me.
But there's a lot that we could talk about there, but we're going to move on to our next one. But thank you very much for that that question, Iroh, and I look forward to your tea in the future. Our next question comes from our friend, Ryan Blade. Question for Lorewatch. Why did Sylvanas destroy the Helm of Domination instead of using it for its original purpose since she got possession of it? Is it so irreversibly changed that doing the latter is no longer possible? We've talked about this a lot. We don't know what reforging it could look like, but the pieces are still incredibly powerful to the point where we use it in Shadowlands to command souls to subjugate them and get them to do what we need them to do. But the question of why did she destroy it instead of keeping hold of it? That is a very good question that we've talked about slightly. And it was, if this is, what was it we talked about a couple weeks ago? Like, could this be part of her plan? We got a question where, like, if it was...
The question was basically, there's lines inside the art book.
Yeah.
That basically speculate, that they come out and say that the Helm of Domination was created to allow the Jailer to initiate whatever his plan is. But it was supposed to be the way path to our freedom, not now this usurper king uses it against us. And so... it was clear that from the beginning, Sylvanas was supposed to get the Helm of Domination. It's not clear whether she was supposed to destroy it or not. Now, I personally just think she looked at it and said, "This hat is freaking ugly. I'm not putting this on my head. Are you kidding me? I just got these new cosmetic options. Look at me. I'm definitely not wearing a big ugly hat and covering my head entirely. That's crazy. Of course, Bolvar wants to cover his head. Look at it. It looks like hamburger. He looks like burned hamburger. Of course he wants to wear a hat. I am not wearing this hat." And so she broke it. Because it was ugly. No, I'm kidding. I honestly, there's interesting thoughts, like Joe's point about the reforging it is interesting. There's an interesting point about the fact of, is it safe to wear?
Because like, we know that people that put it on, that part of it, part of the intention was that it would subjugate whoever was wearing it too. At least that's the assumption.
You'll notice it seems like in the past usage, I honestly think that it was a really bad idea to let... oh, bloody heck. Yet again, the name I cannot remember. Not Gul'dan, but Ner'zhul.
Ner'zhul.
Letting Ner'zhul have it first means that other people have had to basically contend with... people have had to contend with the previous wearer when they put it on. Usually those people were killed or disembodied. So it's like when Arthas put it on, Ner'zhul's spirit was living inside it. I don't know what happened when Bolvar put it on. Arthas had just died. It's pretty clear that Arthas was still hanging around, at least in part, because when we go into Frostmourne's remains, he's in there along with a fragment of Ner'zhul.
Mm-hmm.
Would she have had to basically? Did he have to contend with like Arthas's personality, and would she have had to contend with Bolvar's? Like, would she have had to fight a battle of wills to use the helmet? Like, was destroying it just the easier way to get at its power? Like, I need to get the power of this thing. I don't need the hat. I need the power inside the hat.
Yeah, and one of the...
so it's possible she just destroyed the hat to avoid having to, like, do the whole Battle of Wills thing. Because it took Arthas, like, multiple years on top of Isran before he could actually start acting.
Oh, yeah.
And Bolvar's been sitting there with it for a while, too. So, I don't know. It's quite possible that she just destroyed it because that's what they wanted her to do. But it's also possible she destroyed it because it wasn't what they wanted her to do.
I think that's one of the things that I know people want to hear, but I think it is something that could potentially be the case. Again, we don't know what her plan is, but Sylvanas doesn't exactly seem like somebody who would bow down to a higher power at this point, not anymore. I don't think she would actively allow herself to be subjugated at this point anymore. So the question then becomes, is this part of her grander scheme? And I think that's really the root of this type of questioning is, was there a reason that she destroyed it? And I think part of it is, so I've been going through a lot of the old classic fairy tale stuff, a lot of things that deal with like the fae and the fairy courts. And one of the things that is very, very, very present in all of them is anytime you make a deal with somebody in one of those courts, they will take it very literally, which gives them sort of latitude to work around the bargain in a way that suits their needs while still fulfilling the verbiage of the bargain to the letter of what is spoken or written. It is entirely possible that that is also something that Sylvanas is doing. If the deal was just use the helm to break open the barrier between worlds, well, if she figures out she can destroy the helm and still accomplish what she promised she would do, then she can hold to her word, but still maybe put something else of her plan in motion, right? Anything she does serves her. The question is how. So I know that a lot of people out there have been positing that maybe this is part of her grander scheme to continue her war against the whole cycle of life and death, and maybe leaving those pieces behind for us to get our hands on is part of that intent. And maybe it is. Maybe that was part of her grand plan. Maybe part of her grand plan is that we will ultimately usurp or destroy the jailer, freeing her from her bargain. And maybe that's part of the grand scheme of how she was going to solve the whole cycle of death. We don't know. But I think that there is some merit to the idea that she destroyed the helm simply because it was a way that let her fulfill the bargain of her contract, which, again, she's making deals with things at a cosmic scale that we cannot fathom, without actually breaking any of the terms of that deal, because she followed it to the letter, while still also finding a way to stick it to the people that are trying to exert control over her. Because, again, that is not exactly something that she seems very keen to do. And circling back to something we talked about at the top of the hour here, when Matt said, you know, when we're talking about the bargain, that maybe it was like these degrees of her, you know, making bargain and trying to figure out her way around it, her way around it, her way around it. I don't think that ever stopped. I don't think she ever, you know, just lay down and said, yes, this is my fate now, because that's not who she is after her rebirth as the Banshee Queen. She doesn't just sit down and take it anymore. That's not sort of her shtick. And I would actually be very disappointed with her character if it was. Whereas if this is a plan within a plan within a plan, I could at least accept that. Not saying that it makes her a hero or anything like that, because she's done some really god-awful things. But I like this idea of there's more to this than we can possibly see right now. And I think potentially that the breaking of the helm plays into that in a very specific manner. And again, she's not a dumb character. I think she knows what's going on to a certain extent, and is exerting her will into the scenario versus letting others exert it on her. Anything else before we get to what will probably be our last question?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Our last question comes from our friend Verdigris. With the spoilery Night Warrior knowledge from Ardenwell, the last one attempted to share the power, and the presence of Kalia Menethil, it seems likely, sometime in the future, the Paladin class will open up to both Night Elves and Undead. If this were true, could you hazard a guess on other likely classes opening up?
Is this really a Lorewatch question?
It was signified as for Lorewatch, yes.
Weird, because it's not really a lore question. It's just what classes are they going to open up?
I think does the story inform
the story informs just about any class combination, because there's
already
no
have a Night Elf Paladin, right?
Yeah, that they can't. We got one in Legion, and we've had an Undead Paladin since Vanilla, because Sir Zeliak, and I keep bringing him up. I'm not going to stop. Zeliak is a paladin, guys. He's a paladin, even though he's dead. He's a paladin, even though he's in the Scourge. He's like, oh, don't make me do this, as he hits you with ridiculous amounts of light attacks. What other classes? Well, I'd say something about warriors, but we're already in it. Every race gets us now. So, yeah, I think that's it. I think we're the only class that everybody gets.
Yeah. I think
maybe rogues. No, not rogues. Maybe hunters. Yeah, it might be hunters. Because gnomes got hunters now. See, I can't think of anybody who doesn't have hunters.
I think in context of this, and I think taking it back to the root of it, the way that the story of WoW has evolved so far is that I think you can make a justification for any race being any class at this point. We know humans are capable of shamanistic feats. Look at the Kul'tirans. We know that they're capable of druidic feats. Again, look at Kul'tirans.
Worgen.
Look at Worgen. We know that there's a case to be made for almost any race to be any class. And I think that that's fine because we've seen
the only ones that I would say it's very hard to make a case for is Demon Hunters, because Demon Hunters are all from a specific point and you can't. It's not like Death Knights where they've then come back and had the next Lich King make his own Death Knights.
Yeah.
Like, that's where all the current Death Knights that aren't the original ones have come from. It's the Lich King's like, okay, I'm going to make new ones because bad stuff's coming.
Yeah.
Bad stuff just came. Wow, I was right. So, Demon Hunters, it's pretty much Night Elves or Blood Elves because they were the specific ones that Illidan had to hand when he made them. Like, he showed them how to become Demon Hunters, and there's no... It's not like there was anybody else to teach after he got, you know, his whole thing happened and now he's back. But he's currently stuck punching Sargeras for a long time, so he's not going to be making any new Demon Hunters anytime soon.
Yeah, he's a bit busy.
You could theoretically have, like, the established Demon Hunter characters come up with a way to do it, if you really wanted to have them. But that's the only one that I feel like it would be hard to justify anybody else getting them. But in terms of like any other, like there's a few classes and races that it doesn't make a ton of sense. Like Draenei and Lightforged Draenei, I'm not going to say that I see Warlocks coming in.
Yeah.
People always want Warlocks, those two. And I'm always like, this is like suggesting, you know, hey, have you ever thought about joining the group that's personally tried to kill you?
Hey, remember that time where all of your friends and family decided they were going to join this Dark Order and burn your planet into crisps? Yeah, you want to join us more? That's not going to happen.
So that one's a hard sell. But most of the rest, I mean, can you think of anything? Like, I can't think of anything that shamanism wouldn't work with.
No,
I can't think of a race that couldn't go shaman.
The only other one that I think would be a hard sell would be Goblin Paladins, because they don't generally have a whole lot of belief.
Yeah, and it's very hard to come up with a mercantile way to be a paladin.
Yeah,
because I'll save you from darkness for a price. That's not good. Yeah, you're right.
Damn. And I think even shaman, I think, was a little bit of a stretch for goblin personally, but I could at least accept it with a grain of salt.
With dark shaman and stuff forth, I can kind of handle it. Cause
sure,
if you can have a shaman who works by slapping the spirits into doing what he wants, you can have a shaman who kind of makes deals.
Fair enough.
So, But yeah, I'll be up front and say that I think shamanism should be the most much more widespread than it is.
I would agree.
I don't really get why it's so limited. Most of the Horde can do it, actually, I think.
But I'd like to see Night Elf Shaman at this point, because I mean, their interactions with races like the Firbolg make me think like there's no way, there is absolutely no way that at some point there hasn't been an elf shaman of some type. Right. But we don't see any. But story would dictate that there has to be a possibility of one somewhere. But yeah, I don't think there's a lot of races that don't work with shamanism. I don't think there's any.
Like, in terms of like priests, everybody has their own kind of priests.
Yep.
So that's I think at this point, even gnomes got priests. So I don't. And hunters, I mean, you know, get a bow. Go out into the woods, shoot things. Congratulations, you're a hunter. I don't really feel like that should be a hard sell. Like, you know, the nature, the part where you can tame an animal into being your best friend, even if it's a robot or an undead monster, that's getting into weird magic, but I'm okay with it. I'm okay with gnomes being able to make like robot pets that they hunt with. I'm okay with undead being able to get other undead things to hang out with them. That makes perfect sense to me. And I'm okay with like other hunters figuring it out. Like, yeah, that's how you get a giant undead bear to follow you. Yeah, it's just that easy. Okay, whatever. I'm okay with it. For much the same reason that I think mages and rogues and all that should go to multiple.
Yeah.
I ultimately, in terms of story, I would say it's most classes work with just about anybody.
Yeah. I think that we're going to – I would hopefully think we'll see more of that in the future, especially after this expansion with all the cross-pollinization.
Druids need to get widened up at this point.
I would agree. Like, absolutely.
Almost no reason that the Cenarian Circle wouldn't go, okay, we need more people.
Especially after Battle for Azeroth?
This world's a dumpster fire. Everything's constantly getting destroyed. The planet's leaking its own blood. if you want to help, come on in. Lucian Foxblood, come on in.
Yeah,
we've got Kul'tiran druids. We've got Zandalar druids. We don't care anymore. Just join. Join the Cenarian Circle.
I have been saying that since Battle for Azeroth. If we're sitting there trying to heal the planet and druids are the best chance at doing that, I would think they would recruit any able-bodied person that shows any modicum of talent for it. 100%. Like that, and that is something that needs to be expanded. 1,000%. I agree with you on that one. Sorry.
The Blood Elf Druids, fine. Get them in here. Yep. We don't care.
Yep. They you want to be your weird arcane animal thing? Sure, go for it. Absolutely. Let's go. But that's what I would like to see. But I think we'll see more cross-pollinization. I think we'll see more class race combinations open up. I think that it will be hindered by game mechanics and art as they decide. Because if you look at it, the classes that they've been adding to druidism in particular, they get new druid forms, right? They're not just the classic based druid forms.
Yep.
So I think that that will be the limiting factor, but I would not be surprised if we start seeing that open up in the future. But I think that's going to do it for today for us. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. I do, again, want to thank you for joining us and sending us our questions. Please continue to do so. You can send them again to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. You can send them to us in our Discord channels. And again, if you want to continue to support us in various different ways, be sure to listen to us on Spotify and give us those play numbers, because that does actually help. But thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.